know for you in Mount Pleasant, this is for Timothy, but he will show you the flower. So, okay, welcome. Today we're discussing global change, grand challenge. It's not just but we'll hear from the department as more well or our universe is dynamic. So there are challenges that you're getting as we hold that science is always, it will always be ahead of those challenges. So we'll hear from the department what they're going to say. I'm told the department is already here. So we won't waste time. I'm sorry, I got lost. I thought it was G26. And I went and I said to G26, but I saw police coming in there. Then I said, no, I'm in the wrong place. And I was told that it's an Estian place. I think how many years? I'm more than 5 years in here. But I still get lost. I think the problem is that this place is bigger than Solo, where I come from. Bigger than the village where I come from. Maybe. One thing that I've got to make a comment, not that element, we accept almost your apology that might take place. There is an apology. Most of the time we just ask other people to write things for us. But sometimes we never even look at them. But they might have a different impact on the question of the day. Your apology, which was going to Shanaz, but referred to the comics. Let me just read it for a second. It says, regrettably, I will not be able to attend the presentation next Wednesday on the global grand challenge, as I have several important meetings requiring my presence in the region. In fact, the key is that part of the other important. Somebody is not given the impression that what we are doing here is not that important, but what is happening somewhere is more important than the one that's happening. But sometimes I'll ask Shanaz to write a letter. I don't even read it there. She writes it the way that she wants to see. And then somebody interprets it the other way. But we accept the apology. But I think in future, maybe that I think the problem is that for politicians are very paranoid. They always look at every term that you use. So it's just as to say, let's make sure that when we write this thing, as we think that that was that important, I think that's the one that we should make sure that we want that. And we're not lamenting about this, but it's just something that we need to discuss about. So now that the department is here, and I think the faces are the same, are there new faces, Thomas? Oh, there are new faces. Or if there are new faces, then we can tell you the members of parliament so that you know who you are going to be talking to, who you are going to be presenting.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies. I thought you were too diplomatic. But let's hope our policies are acceptable. The manner in which it has been housed, and I think the right amount for that. And that in future, you must write that he has other commitments. Because this is more important than what you want to do. Because with this, what is going to happen, at least to worry what is going to happen, can be derailed by this meeting. And I don't think it will be accepted in future if such a letter couched in that manner comes to the committee. What accept? I think we must not be too diplomatic, because I think you are trying to be very nice, but it's unacceptable. And we want the department to know that because this is the most important of everything that we do. You know, we are public representatives elected to oversee what is of interest to the country. nobody can tell us that our meetings are less important. It's unacceptable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And maybe I think we don't need to leave at this point. But I think the importance of this is just to say if the meetings that we have here are as important. Maybe sometimes you might find the chair saying a lot of talks. It's my belief that if people are free and relaxed, they contribute more. But some other people might upload that and think that no, those people are not serious. Yet there are times that when you are very serious, but you want to make people to relax and be able to say what they want to say. Because if they are tense, sometimes they are not as productive as you are when you have less tense to just be honest. But let's not belabor the point. I think it's something that you think that. You don't need to be diplomatic, you just need to go head on. You have to say from the first minute.
Yes, but in thank you. In other committees, the requirement that the DG, the next senior person, attends meeting, that's anything nice, the science and technology, allow me but I think. Then it goes to the end of the letter, and so it comes across as if you have been taken for granted. And so, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. No, it's not something that I think that when I read the letter, I said, it's not something that was co-counsel was discussed, and this was coming to me by Shannon. No, I think we need to correct this thing. And I think we have had. Let's go on. Maybe let's tell you who we are, for those who are new. Maybe because we are looking this way, all of us are not looking at each other. So we might have to tell the people. That's a little bit.
Thank you very much, sir. My name is Tiko Igana, from Aute, from the agency. Nadir Paulson from the Western Cape.
My name is Lydia Sebo from Alexander County.
My name is
Good morning, I'm Amelie Lopez, please.
Thank you. But those are members that are going to be listening to your presentation and having listened to your presentation that will be in the presentation. I forgot to welcome you to the techniques of hoping that they are well today. You know, the science that is going to sit to whatever condition that the science has got answer to everything. So you don't have to worry. Go. I was very pleased yesterday when somebody said, the big guy at his main chest was very interested with the road in Limpopo. And I think I was interested with the road, let alone that guy. The actual purpose of the road is good. So the main person in the chest was, I should say, the road was very good in the book. So you must say, we're tagging you. I don't think voice is coming from the same area. So you can tell the speakers that were very good that he commended the role. Thank you.
So you're saying that ongoing action is a good job of those roads in Popo.
So you're saying that ongoing is a good job of those roads in Popo. We appreciate that.
You think that we were on point in doing a good job, not that on point in a good job.
I'm
actually not leading the delegation today. Another DDG is leading the delegation. And it was in that context, Chair, that I offered my apologies to you. The department was going to be represented here at this level. So I'm sorry for the misunderstanding. I did not mean to send any negative signals at all in the context of another DDG leading the delegation today. So I accept the members' admonishments, and I'm sorry, but it was a misunderstanding from my side. So the delegation today is being led by DDG Patel.
Thanks, Chair, and further to what Sir Thomas states, we take the comments completely, and we want to give assurance that we need to negotiate where DDG or DG would present, we would then do that, of course, you so that you're familiar. We will bring this to the attention of the next executive meeting so that the whole department knows the kind of essential requirements in terms of integrity of the portfolio committee. So we do see this committee as being crucial, and we think that we never going to achieve our objectives of increasing the kind of science and technology enterprises of this close coordination and working with the portfolio committee. Just on the basis, just to introduce the delegation and to contextualize this work, you can see we are a bit bigger than the delegation that came when we presented the water roadmap. The Global Change Grand Challenge was one of the five Grand Challenge areas that emerged out of the 10-year innovation plan. At the time when we thought about the Global Change Grand Challenge, there were different areas identified for focus. The first was to improve the science of global change, and we use the word global change deliberately and not climate change, because it's a lot more than climate change. But climate interacting with changes in water, changes in land management, etc. So the new terminology that is used over is the one is global change. So at the time when we designed the Global Change Grand Challenge, we had a track focusing on the science, we had a track focusing on technology development, and we had a track looking at how the science and technology can be used to improve services, to improve understanding, etc. Over that period, the Grand Challenge here has grown significantly with adoption of waste and water roadmaps, with the science being taken up. And about 2 years ago, a decision was taken to do a bit of a restructuring within the department, and the science aspect was under the leadership of Thomas of the High School. It was moved to Thomas for myself. In the past, it was managed by one program. And then within the program that I'm leading on, we're focusing on the technology and the services component. So that's why we have two delegations. We have Henry Roman, Dr. Henry Roman, who we've met previously. He'll be talking about the technology aspects of the roadmap, particularly on wasting water and ecological services, because we did a big... Yes, he's the previous water man. Today, hopefully after today, you'll see that he'll be regarded as the environmental technology man, because there's other aspects of the portfolio. So we did a detailed briefing on the water, but there are members here who haven't been exposed to that. So we might cover some similar ground, but we won't go into the same level of detail. Then behind me we have Professor Jonas Lett, who's known as ICF, now he's here in the person portfolio. He's the chief director responsible for a range of areas in the kind of science areas, and he was together with Duma Matuan, will present on what is called knowledge generation component or science component after this. So the way in which we want to do the presentation with your permission is that Juna and Duma will do the first presentation, which will contextualize in some other more detail the Global Change Grand Challenge, and then they'll focus in on the science issues, the knowledge generation issues. And then we have Dr. Roman, who will present on some of the technology. So without any further delay, I'll go to the team. I don't know if you and I are going to make any comments now. So Luma Matwani is the director responsible for environmental science, earth system science. How could I have expected them? So he's the director responsible for earth system science, and he reports to Luma and then of course to Thomas. So he'll start. They've agreed amongst themselves that they will focus for about 25 minutes each presentation, and then there should be enough time for questions and comments. Thanks, Chief.
When you talk about water, you know, when you number one, you don't flash it. Because you know, waiting for it, you wait until your God deliverance comes for number one. And that's how that was in his intention. All of us were doing that, were watching water. The God of mercy told us, it's cancer.
Thanks, Chair, and we want the members, honorable members of the Portfolio Commission on Science and Technology, my fellow colleagues, and ladies and gentlemen. I think it's clear that my name is Mamadou Wali. I look after the portfolio for FCC, which is the third component of the secretary. So I'll be taking you through the science components of the Green Challenge and focusing on where we started and giving a sense of the goals and the aims, and also turning into where we are and the future plans around the science component. So I believe that the presentations were circulated, so I'll just try to be quick, so that we can have enough time for questions or questions. So the first slide here, I think DDG Patel has spoken about this already, just given the issue of the concerns, and indicating that was one of the five strategic areas in the Kenya Innovation Plan. And with the Global Change Innovation Framework that we developed in 2008, Three areas were identified, and those areas were in the area of knowledge generation, which is the science part that I'm responsible for. The other part is the technology innovation, and the third is the science policy interface, the bridge between science output to industry or claim. So I think also as DDG Patel has indicated, a broad definition was adopted of the climate change rather than the need to climate change. So as you can see, the description of the climate change refers to a number of things. So the indication was that you cover that large scope. So the zooming into the three major components, also indicating that I will be focusing on the first one, which is the knowledge generation, and with the aim of improving the scientific understanding of global environmental change. And the science policy interface, Dr. Roman will touch on that in this presentation, as well as the technical development. So I'll be focusing on the first component. So let's just to give you context, further context to this, to say the conceptualization of the current challenge was not in isolation, but took into account a number of strategic areas or even strategic documents. As you can see in this slide, there were a number of strategic documents that informed the design of the current challenge. That's when a view from the Department of Science and Technology was one day from Science and Technology, the Development Strategy, and from other sector departments such as Department of Environment Affairs, the National Sustainable Development Framework, and Climate Change Reform Strategy, and other sectoral policy documents. So these are the policy documents that have shaped the design of the Green Challenge. So in terms of the performance measures, when the Green Challenge was designed, the way we identified areas that we wanted to impact. So the first one was around science, with the view that in the 10-year horizon, we'll be able to monitor or measure the extent of scientific understanding that is improved as a result of numerous science programs that we have implemented or put in place. So there was also made around technology and relevance. So I think those are the parts that Dr. Roman touched on. So stepping back a bit just to indicate how this work translated into the work that the Department of Science and Technology has. So this work is contributing to partners such as the CIP around, which is more on developing innovation capacity of NSI and contributing to socioeconomic development. At the program level,
Well, before the internal development that the DDG touch us overall, we were contributing to each program, such as one of these programs, such as which was contributing to. That was around identifying including a sustained portfolio of high sustained science, technology, sustainability, sustainability development, and green of the economy. So with that realignment, internal realignment, we are now, the work that we do now contributes to program 4, which is under EDG of the island, which is strategic objective 4. That's the strategic development to design the register of Africa and just location. So that's how we work that we do fit into the department of strategic objective. So now, what we developed after the conceptualization of the trade challenge, we started off on the science part, we developed a high-level priority science priority. So we held that in the form of global research plan, which was the process of developing this research plan was more inclusive, democratic, and with the involvement of science community, business community, and also business. So what we see here in the form of this plan is a well-articulated document that has inputs from the world. So the intention with this research plan was purely to hook up effort, our effort in the knowledge, that's the knowledge generation stage. And there were key principles that that were considered in developing this research plan. One was around the concept of multi-transdisciplinary approach. And also, one of the key was also to recognize that countries that we have in the country, our location, geographical location, as an important reality that an advantage, especially around the understanding of global environment, with a specific emphasis on climate change, given the our proximity to the three oceans that we have. So in terms of where we are with the plan was finalized in 2010 and implemented through different platforms. So we have created a number of flagship programs, research programs in different areas of the research plan. So here we have mentioned a number of them, access, I think we might have heard of access, which is more on the African sciences. We have ION, which is more on the geosciences, science more on the observational science, monitoring systematic observation, and a number of them I'll be touching on. So the funding of this flagship programs is funded through NRF as the strategic science management. So what we have on this slide is just a summary of the research plan and with the four areas, broad areas that we are. So as you can see, the first two parts are the first part and the second part are more on this biophysical science part of the global change. And C and E is more on the socio-political science, looking at the softer science. So all in all, we have 80 things under the research question. So under each thing, there are specific research questions that are being asked that you want to ask. Deal with. So these are in answer to different problems. So in terms of institutional arrangement, there was a decision to have institutional arrangement that would have implement the various components of the credit channel and also to assign roles and responsibilities to different actors. And if you can see the middle part, the blue area there are the parts that focus on generating new knowledge, so which is the research component. We also had the governance management structure, which is at the top part. We have the property performance investment structure, which was intended to be a multi-stakeholder kind of forum that will include business and other players that will help shape the work that we do. And evaluate performance and also make decision or recommendation in terms of where we can make decisions or strengthen investigation. So this council is supported or is supported by two structures in the form of science committee, which is on property and it's operational. We have the full science committee there and also have one intelligent resource mobilization. So this was intended to be a team that we would have identified new sources of funding for to augment the system.
So, in terms of the last part that I want to touch on, because the next slide will be in the same, you will see something across there, so that's what we did it. And to facilitate and support science support to decision making, there was a decision to create what we call the role for global games. So the intention was to create that structure that would support government in terms of extracting policy implication of the global change research. So that would be a structure that would support or make sure that evidence, science evidence, skills has to decision. So that was the intention. So the next line, as you can see, I've tried to indicate, I think, where the indicators involved has to show those are well-grounded structures that are there functioning. So, I think with the exception of the state agency, because we do have the South African National Safety Agency, I think we should have indicated that. And on the, then the below there, you can see there is the cross. So we never created the growth for provision simply because that was overtaken by events. Because at the time, the provision pension was conceptualized. There was also a process of developing climate change response policy, national climate change response policy. So that policy, one of the recommendations or suggestions there was to create a similar structure in terms of function to what we were hoping to establish. So there was a decision reached to say there was no need to continue the global global change, seeing that the similar structure was being proposed under the global that the climate change response policy. So that was the decision one. Never go ahead with that. So in terms of the programs that we have created, we have a number of them. I'll be touching on them. We have Access, Scion, Ion Circle, Global Change Society, Sustainable Research Program, Science Centers, and all of those. But then I'll be talking to them in detail. So starting with the first one, we have the Access, which is a visual network of collaborating partners with the CSI as the hub of that network. So we have universities, we have research councils, and many other institutions in that space. So the purpose of Access, since they are focusing mainly on health system research, so they provide platform for education and training for that work. So in terms of status, Access is fully operational. It came to, I think, in 2009. So they are well-grounded and operating optimally. So the funding to Access is channeled through NRF and through a Center of Excellence movement. And there was a set development agreement with the CSI as a hub of Access. So future priorities for Access to grow Access network, including international collaboration, regional outputs, produce a cohort of masters and other postdoc schools. So I think at the end of the presentation, I'll give you a sense of where we are with some of this program, our new development around this program as well, because there is something that we need to address at the moment. So in terms of higher data education, there is a research program of Access, and they're also focusing on education and training. So they have got students that are learning for a task or getting bursary and working on this area that Access has identified. In fact, there are about 7 to my area. So coming to Scion is also a network of partners, is the Agri and NRF program. So we are providing funding to Access to do mainly the observational science, with a systematic observation and monitoring. So they have got 6 functional nodes spread across the country. Here in Western Cape, I think we have 2. We have Ikadaveni and Famous notes. So, the purpose of ASAN is to coordinate support launch and research environment observation. So, the funding is indicated because the NRF program, China through NRF, do contribute to the raised line funding of. from the Slovakian Association of So, future priorities to continue providing world class education in the most important There was, I think, in 2019, this is what we call 10-year trend in terms of environmental change. So out of that big book, they list out the policy implication and cut it into your policy dossier. That was fuel for government initiatives and conditions. So just to give you a sense of the kind of work that I've done, as I indicated, there are 6 points I know that are indicated by those records. And we have Peter just to show the kind of product that are coming out of our work. ION, which is the African Earth Observation Network, is a geoscience program, and it has a few members in that network. This would be a house hosted by the University of Cape Town, but then the hub has now moved to Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. So we have other universities that are joining the geoscience, such as the University of that are participating in that, CBT and others as well. So the purpose of this is to foster cutting edge international connected science and machine learning using advanced tools and technology. So there are a number of interesting products that have come out of this work. I think I'll touch it in the next slide. So the status is that there are two projects under the IRON program, Inkabe Africa and Kure Africa. The Inkabe Africa is a joint program with Germany and Kure with France. So there's been a set of students between the two countries. Managing this channel through NRF and through a contract that we have, NRF has with NNMU. And the priority there is increased contribution to global change performance targets. We have targets that I will talk about towards the end of my presentation so that you get a sense to see how far we are from reaching this target. So this is the picture just to show the kind of work that ION does. One of the important work that ION is currently involved is involving the Karoo, the shale gas exploration there in the Karoo area. And also working closely with the Geo Council for Geoscience on technology, especially around the passive underground mine water application, which is one of the projects that came out of the area. Then we have another project that we are trying to expand is pure on the carbon observation in the oceans. So this is a CSI map, multi-institutional, aiming to understand the link between climate and the carbon cycle to the Southern Ocean. So the paper there is to develop better understanding and projecting the role of Southern Ocean in global emission challenges. So the program is fully operational and we are now in phase two of that. And CSI is the heart or the driver of this program. There is the funding, there is a contract with CSI to do fire and so on. So it's a priority deployment of more gliders, which are robotic, and to other parts of the ocean, Southern Ocean, develop climate up and more. So those are the areas that they are currently focusing on and trying to improve on. So these are just some of the pictures from the work that they do on the first side. They focus on those areas there, the six areas, the research area. So in terms of applications, there are a number of instruments that they are using, the gliders there and so forth. So we also have, we used to fund a number of biodiversity projects. So there was a decision, I think, in 2014 to consolidate those projects in the mega program. So we came up with the biodiversity program as the amalgamation of those small projects that we are supporting. So the program is currently operational. It's being managed by Sambi, which is the biodiversity management. And the granting function of that is handled by the NRF. So the purpose there is to provide similar value chain for fundamental biodiversity information production, information and application to benefit society and transportation. So as I indicated, it's a full functional program and with the well-founded government and management structure. So the funding is through NRF and funding is managing that. So the priority there will be two contributions to our change affairs and sustainable development, especially the green economy, because there are a number of green economy projects that are coming. So this is one of the large projects under FDIP, which is a PTE, which is where we are beginning to get interesting results and products. So there are 17 partners, different organizations that are involved in the PTE. So the other program is what we call Risk Environment Design Centers, which is a complementary program to the main program that Dr. Roman was talking about around the Risk Environment Atlas Initiative. So this was fueled to create centers in the previously disadvantaged areas of communities where services can be provided to different users in those communities. So the idea here, the target here was users such as municipalities, health practitioners, as local farmers in those areas, so that they are able to get services that support their businesses or their what they do. So we started off with three centers in the form of universities, and what we did there was to provide funding for the universities to set up these facilities and also employ the service of full-time managers of the centers. And the idea was that they would be working closely with the main initiative, the Risk Advantage Atlas College, so that their capacity building in terms of interpreting the risks that are being identified and what they mean to the local communities. So the three centers at the moment is the University of Limpopo, Forte, and Oltatuzu, and the funding for this center is coming through the main poverty funding at NRF. And the priority there is to increase student enrollment, increase knowledge output, increase number of centers. And the idea was that in 10 years' time, we should have at least covered what we call the rural-based universities, creative centers at those universities. So the other program is the Global-based Society Sustainable Research Program. This was one out of, when we started, the current country is trying to accept the major areas of the poverty research. We realized that the biophysical areas of research was covered. There were many players in the space. So, but the coordination of the social ecological was not that well. And the idea with this program was to try to consolidate that well in a major program that would be at the scale of the biophysical component of the global change. So that was the intention of this program. So as I indicated, the purpose there was to challenge the support investment into social ecological and sustainable research, which at the time there was less attention paid to. So this program is fully operational. We have extended by a year, so this will be the last year of the program, phase one of this particular program. So the idea is that we use the lesson learned to craft the new phase of the program. It might be the same or might be based on what we have observed or the learnings that we have got. So it's a program that's managed by NRF funding to different institutions that are benefiting from this program is funded through NRF. So then, okay, as you can see, the feature part is designed on the feature of the program. So we'll be using those lessons left to drive on the feature of the program. So in terms of the overall performance, we also develop what we call the global change balance scorecard with the four or five areas around which we measure the impact of the trade challenge. So as you can see, there is the knowledge and innovation output and assets, there's the human capital development, there was also effort to promote South Africa as a preferred destination, and also investment to generate more, attract more investment, and also on impact and relevance. So in red there, I think I'd like to capture just to give you a sense to show what is the current impact in this performance area. So in terms of knowledge and innovation grants, we are currently producing around 100 scientific publications per year. do the research about that. So we have had up to date two knowledge products that were created through areas of research. And the second one on human capital, we are funding around 250 postgraduate students. So these are the support that I'm talking about here. It's not full-time support. It's a combination of full-time bursaries and partial bursaries. Because we do have students that will be supported at the house, you know, not giving the full bursary. So on the research destination, we have attracted regional partners or international partners, and there are a number of programs, for example, SACTREP with the Japanese government, and where we are doing work in the Indian Ocean, around nationality work. And there's also Southern African Scientific Center and for climate change and adaptive land management, which we are five African partners together with GEM on that program. So on investments, the idea was to increase the investment, but at the moment we are doing, the research is being funded at the level of 55 million per year. And with additional funding being leveraged to this collaboration platform. On impact, that's the We haven't picked up on that because we have just initiated the process of assessing or evaluating the whole train challenge. That's the process that we have just begun. So we hope we'll be able to see the impact of the effort we have made. That's right. So toward the end of my presentation on immediate priorities, we are embarking on repositioning access as a specific program management function, and that process is underway, and we are also linked to access to position with the development of a more focused research program in the African science that we are doing, and where we see access as a key player there. So as I indicated also, the mid-term review of the global climate challenge, which is now underway, and there is ongoing contribution and reporting against outcomes and TSF performance indicators. So these are two indicators or actions for this that flow from the National Development Plan and the outcome plan or environment sector of the MEP. So if I should just give you the sense of those items, the one is for DSG to assist with creating a functional climate change research network that will support climate change response in the country. The second one is around producing biannual reports to cabinet on the state of climate change science. Those are the indicators that we need to support. So that I mentioned in this slide. So the last part here on the immediate priorities, we all know that is the operation practice of the economy. We, through Provagens, we are implementing some elements of the operation practice. So the view is that we need to strengthen that. On medium to long term, we want to continue creating additional instruments or creating research tech in areas that we need to strengthen. So we'll be using this instrument within NRF to consolidate that way. And one other aspect that would be to strengthen the governance management structures, because we are almost 5 years into the current challenge, so we should be able to pick up where we need to step. Then we also want to, we aspire to establish a committee of practice in global change monitoring and observation, because we realize there are a number of players in this area that the work is done in pieces, so we want to harmonize the work so that we are able to So on the science centers, the hope is to spread this to other areas that are not covered. We are looking at Northwest, England, and Southern Cape, and as areas where we can create the science centers. So lastly, I think is to try to strengthen the interface with the regional science initiatives, because we do provide leadership in one of a number of regional initiatives. For example, here we have the startup work that South Africa leads in the sense of science and technology innovation supporting climate change efforts in the region. We also have SASCAR, I've spoken about SASCAR as well, and we also have promotional programs such as FutureF, which is the area that we are interested in being asked to provide leadership for. So those are the regional initiatives that we are talking. So I think with that, I'll end there.
No, Chair, I wanted to find out whether we want to take questions on this presentation or allow Henry to now focus on the technology and science policy issues, and then we can take questions to that. But that would be fantastic.
Okay, but I'm not using myself. We are together. I'll allow members to decide for us. But I just to comment about I don't want to answer that. If I understand you correctly, let me try and make it simple. I know we must all not be all of us the Christians, but this seems to be talking to the fact that one day they're going to be a judgment day. I'll tell you what I'm trying to make that answer. Is that we are in this act. And in trying to live, we are at the same time destroying it. Now, it is those changes that are happening that might actually bring the judgment day. If you are a Christian, I'm not the judgment day that on those Saturday the world will disappear. It's still upon us, if anything, and forgiving. Now we will want to look into that as scientists. But looking into that, one gets out of that. We might look at that as South Africa. But how serious are the other countries? Because why isn't it? I know it's global change. But how serious are they in looking into the change? Because what's happening in America, what's happening in China, is good to affect us, whether we like it or not, if they don't look into what we're trying to do. And that goes on to say, when I was in heaven, I said one day I was debating you, but one of these balances, I was saying, today we're going to get a new balance that we don't know where it's coming from. In fact, musicians, it might be a new balance. Next year there's going to be another one, which is actually happening. Now it depends on our scientists to die ahead of the balances to predict that if the temperatures are like this, then they're going to get this type of viruses mutating and changing. Now that says how much medical research is being done to look into that. Because one believes that what is going to make a guy is a health related thing. Whether we destroy the earth by the environment by having less oxygen, whether we destroy the earth by whatever, by your greenhouse, whatever you call it, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a health impact that is going to cause something that is going to be less. Now, but you don't seem to be hearing a lot about the health effects, let alone that we don't even have the effects of the folks that is happening there. But I'm mentioning this, I'm just taking opportunities to make a chair. I'm not asking them to answer. You don't have to answer those questions. But he says, I was just mentioning them, but going to the numbers, to say numbers, do we want another presentation before we leave this one, or do we wait, do we finish up this one? But that's to add something else. That's just to add something else. You know, I'm probably talking like that. You see the electric wires that are all over South Africa. Sometimes you see a desk standing in different of electric wires. Usually you see them standing in one end. And you ask yourself, why is this debt not being sold for something the company should get? But it's sitting there, it's sitting on that one. So then I was in intercamp with grandson. One time he stood up to one professor and said, you know, if you want to protect yourself against the Wakanda storm, when is thundering? And don't open up your legs. Don't stand on two legs. Stand on one leg. And the thunderstorm won't hit you. And she explained that the Jesus just said that even standing on one leg, the electricity comes up and it goes up into a certain direction. Whereas if you are standing on two legs, it comes up in one direction and goes up in the other direction. And it will heal because it goes through a certain cause of electrical change. That was revealing to me. Much as I thought that I knew science, but it was never revealing. Now, the question is, are scientists close to the community for us to understand? I always equate it to health. Where you find that our hospitals are full, our churches are full because we are alone in hospital, because people don't understand primary health care, which is something that we need to teach them and make them aware that if you've got diarrhea, you can use, you don't have to go to the hospital and still get the end of the surgery. And only those who are very sick will go to the hospital. Even yet, we've got a lot of scientists who don't deserve, but we don't know. We don't need them. Either we're afraid of them, or they're afraid of us, or somebody doesn't want us to meet so that we can get this information, which is what they're giving us now. And obviously that goes on to say, is government aware of the good work that they're doing? But let's see, if you don't have to answer all these things. Remember, the other thing, I wanted to answer as England was asking us to do, but kindly, your hands are done.
Thank you, Chair. I also propose that we continue with the next presentation, but I have a request. There are so many acronyms and abbreviations, and I'm quite lost. Could you ask the department to please give us a list of all these acronyms and abbreviations and what they stand for?
I know Annelie worried about FBI, but you put another, and I will give Jesus about the other FBI. You were lucky because you put something beyond the FBI, so that was just confusing. Matter of fact, what do you do? I think, do you agree with Annelie that we continue? Okay. You don't have to answer this question now. But let's continue. That's my comment.
I think
there is some
thought
on
that. Just to show you that in the testing, I think there are 15 things that touch on the health issues. So there are some ideas. At the same time, there's a problem within the final test as for the health condition. So most of the answers to some of the questions we have that the problem of pressure in the life. So
now I was about to ask you whether you're a Christian or not. That one I can only ask you to thank you for those that affect you.
Maybe I have encouraged him a lot now, I focused as well, and give him a signal when he's going beyond 25 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. And also I thank you for the kind words earlier. As a person from the water sector, it's always good to know that people are starting to think about the issues and the impact. I've also got from the Ethan case, so I'm used to today I'm however going to talk a bit broader about environmental innovation. And I'm going to take you through another roadmap that's developed, which is the Waste Research Development and Innovation Roadmap. I'm going to talk a bit about the Climate Technology Center Network, for which I'm the national designated entity.
for South Africa, and a little bit about the climate change work we've been undertaking with regards to the economy.
Second, I find that it's bullet point one and two, the people that are different.
Yes, sir. Just to reiterate what Ms. Mbatuwane said earlier, is the strategic objective to which I'm working towards is to identify, grow and sustain a portfolio of high potential science, technology and innovation capabilities for sustainable development and the greening of both society and the economy. We just had the sustainable development goals released at the end of last year, so the work we're doing a little bit was preempting that just a little bit, but that will give us further guidance as what we should, how we should prioritize our work as well. Also, in ESG or environmental services and technologies, we identified the water and waste sectors as the areas to focus attention on in terms of the green economy. Now, in ESG, we have an energy chief director, which is why I'm not looking at energy per se, but also the International Labour Organization has also identified water and waste as a quick means in developing green jobs. So it shows that our thinking is not limited only to South Africa. And then if you look at the Investment Development Corporation and DBSA's Green Jobs Report, they identified natural resource management as having the most potential for green jobs in South Africa. And that is an important point that comes back to the work to what I discussed last time regarding catchment management. Now, I'll start with the Water Resource Development and Innovation Roadmap, and a few months ago, DDD Patel said, when I presented last time, some of the members were not in the room, so I'm going to go over it again, but not in as much depth and detail as I did to respect. This is just a quick timeline showing how current establishment of the unit to where we are. So in 2012, we started developing an MOU with the Water Research Commission. That was signed in 2014. The two deputies were also appointed in 2012. In 2012, we did our first joint project to identify where the gaps are in wastewater and water technologies in South Africa. That was work jointly funded by DSC and WRC and undertaken at UGT. That sort of led us into where the gaps are, led us into the development of the roadmap itself. So we also in 2013 started looking at we engaged private and public sector to look at establishing an innovative instrument, and that is the Water Technologies Demonstration Program, which we established in partnership again with WRC. And we're also participating in the Eureka platform under the European Union. And in that platform is a section dedicated to water called Aqua, and WRC or WADA is assisting us in how we engage on that platform. We also then in 2014 started the development of the roadmap proper, so we had different sector engagements. We had 32 workshops at 64, I think, institutions. And at the end of that year, we got invited to present to the Water and Sanitation Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, because they got views of this through our engagements with the Department of Water and Sanitation. The roadmap was approved at ESG in 2015. Water and Sanitation integrated this roadmap into their response plan for the National Water Resource Strategy 2, and also the Water Research Commission integrated this into their corporate strategy. The portfolio management units has been approved to be implemented at the Water Research Commission, and next week they're actually having the interviews for the manager. So this is what the roadmap looks like. Just briefly, the problem statement for South Africa was 98% of all our water resources are already allocated. Non-revenue water sitting at 36% on average across the country. Now, non-revenue water refers to two things. It refers to physical leaks in the system as well as maintenance in the system and inability to collect the money. So what we need to bear in mind is also in South Africa we have the free basic water system at play for indigenous communities or persons. So that's something to keep in mind when we're trying to address that 36%. But more importantly, according to the National Development Plan,
supply will outstrip demand by 17% in 2030. Looking at those factors, we at DST looking at how we support the Department of Water and Sanitation through human capital development. And here I have to point out the skills we develop according to our mandate is masters in PhDs and postdocs and then the research that gets undertaken in the country. The research and development is the evidence that we gather and innovation, the technology, the non-technological parts. It's not just about technologies, nice fancy equipment, but it's also about institutional arrangements, how we actually make things happen in the system. So there's seven clusters we identified. The green clusters refer to the supply of water, and the blue clusters refer to the demand of water. I'll unpack a bit the use of sources, which is increasing our ability to make use of more sources of water, including alternatives. The reason I'm picking that is we're in a drought situation, and that is a priority right now for the country. The opportunities that the roadmap potentially can realize, firstly, is better coordination and improved decision-making supported by the translation of research into factors. What we have in the water sector is a lot of people doing a lot of really good work, but the WRC is not coordinating falls on the wayside, so we need to get the whole system properly coordinated to reach the impact we need. We also, through WADA, want to get more products and services to reach the market. But it's just back of the envelope exercise, if we reduce water losses, we could reduce 15% through innovation interventions. We could have potentially put 3.5 billion rand back into the system, or make it available for investment in areas of need. And that's not a big number when we think about all those priorities we face as a country. Now looking at the cluster on sources, I'll come here at the top like the focus. So the first thing that this water PMU has to undertake is to develop a research plan which will define the research streams and make sure that it's aligned with NWRS and the desalination strategy of the Department for Water Sanitation. We also would like to, in the medium term, put together a center of excellence for technologies that are associated with water recycling, and desalination is one of the components of water recycling. We have in Carlton in particular return flows, so already we're recycling water in Carlton, people are just not aware of it. When the water goes out the wastewater treatment works, it flows back into the barrage, gets treated by rainwater and comes back to your tap. It's recycling the water but without a physical intervention. So that's the plan is available on the WRC website. I think I have also sent the documents to the members. Each one of the clusters mentioned here has a plan that has this one to address how we actually unpack that over time. The partnerships, as I said, Department of Water and Sanitation integrated this in Chapter 14, which is the RPI chapter, the Research Development Innovation chapter. We're also participating in the Water Sector Leadership Group, where we have presented this roadmap to them. In terms of the Department of Environmental Affairs, we're engaging on ecological infrastructure, which is payment for ecosystem services under a new name, because the reason being Peter Lukey from Department of Environmental Affairs put it forward that if we look at the environment as infrastructure that needs to be operated and maintained, we may actually start looking at it with different eyes. We're also looking with the DEA Natural Resource Management Directorate on joint planning on coordinating the environmental services part of research in South Africa, and here we're focusing on catchment management as the beginning. How do we coordinate all the players from government to researchers to civil society within a catchment in order to realize water security as our departure point? I've mentioned already on Water Research Commission. SALGA, we've put together with WADA, the South African Local Government Association, has partnered with us on the Technology Accelerator Program. There are two projects currently underway in the city of Hobart, which SALGA has just identified. With Randwater, we're currently looking at drafting a three-way MOU between Randwater, the WRC, and the DST. And then I've mentioned already the Eureka Aqua platform. Just to mention, of the three projects that have got that label, that Eureka label, only
One is co-funded with Europe. We haven't been able to secure the gap two. We've got the, our funding is ready, we just haven't been able to secure the Europe because of funding from the EU. And all three of the projects are actually looking at the treatment for AMD or acid mine water. In terms of human capital development, currently we have 14 students in total. Five male, nine of the female, and the 50-50 split between the in terms of equity. We've also established the biomimicry platform last year. Biomimicry is where you utilize what you see in nature and mimic what nature does to solve a problem. And there are various ways of looking at it. You can test maybe redesigning the wings of planes to better mimic how birds fly and so on. We're also predicting to grow our student cohort here to 35 students. And this is over and above the students already funded in the system, either through the WRC or through the MRF. So looking ahead for the coming financial year, I said we're going to establish the water RDI PMU, the managers coming in. We're looking at developing a water NSI partnership and tracking system, and this relates back to how we're going to fund the roadmap. The DSC has not got all the banks that will make it happen, so we need to look at what happens in the system and also track it. So we're also looking at preparing a joint NTF bid to Treasury with the Department of Water and Sanitation this coming year. And also looking at a consolidated partnership and co-funding strategy, also to address how we find funds to make the roadmap happen. Now the next one is the waste research development innovation roadmap. This one is the same format followed as before. Here we had to do a lot of upfront groundwork though, because the waste sector in South Africa does not have a lot of data or available data that you can get your hands on. So we had to do a lot of work upfront before we even began with the roadmap development. The first thing we found was there's no accredited training for waste management professionals in South Africa. So you have modules for waste in different degrees in environmental science, civil engineering, but it's only a module. So the person is not properly equipped to actually enter the sector and work as let's say, a manager. So we put out the call for a degree in waste management, University of Northwest and UKZN, they responded. We put together the last year was the first year that we had a BSc honors degree in waste management after that University of Northwest. PhD students have graduated. This year it shifted focus to be part-time, not full-time. The reason for that is the majority of people that are working on where really require their expertise, but they can't leave their jobs because they're sitting in the class for a full year. So they're doing the class, so we shifted the focus for the year to part-time. So they 11 of them are involved for this coming year. We also undertook the first waste sector survey for South Africa. We did the first waste valuation report, which didn't complete the whole waste valuation chain. We only did the first part of it. And that has told us that the waste sector is worth about 25 billion rand in South Africa. But of that, 17 billion rand we might have been using. That 17 billion rand is going straight into a landfill, straight into a hole in the ground. And that's what we're trying to solve, to bring that out. We also held our first industry science workshop on our organic waste. We have held two more since yesterday. I was attending the third one, which is on electronic waste, and the previous one was on bioplastics. The roadmap's been approved, the PMU is established, so the implementation manager at CSR already working the last year. I'm going to have to speed up, so I'm not going to go through all of this. But basically the need was, again, we need to coordinate the sector. It's a very small research sector in South Africa. I have to mention that. We have literally a handful of people in the country that can supervise PhDs in the US sector. So our first departure point is grow the capabilities. So we need to grow the cohort of PhDs that are graduating in order to create more supervisors in our system. We embrace the principles of the waste hierarchy through the National Waste Management Strategy, where the provision there is to reduce landfill, to reduce the weight of those into landfill from 90% where it is now to 10%. And that's where this roadmap can play a role, is in trying to address that. So there are three pillars as before, again, ACD, R&D, and waste, innovation itself. The approach we took, again, is the same as the water one. We had regional stakeholder workshops to prioritize our waste streams and our goals. We then had, after that, we engaged with industry experts for each of the five priority waste streams, which, and then academic expert working groups to look at the six clusters of the roadmap that were identified. So here we have the same layout. Here we've got the six clusters. We've got strategic planning, so we can strengthen our skills and generate the evidence just to inform decision-making, planning, policy, development. Modeling and analytics, so to strengthen our skills, methods, tools, models, and techniques, then to apply these to the evidence that we gather, technology solutions, which is the major part of this roadmap, the roadmap's implementation. Waste logistics, which is a new area that was identified, so that's to strengthen the skills around the movement of waste across the country. So, for instance, if we're going to build an e-waste dismantling and recycling plant, do we put it in Bloemfontein or do we make one in each of the regions around the country? Yeah. So we need to understand the dynamics around that. Waste and the environment, again, is an obvious one, and the waste in society, because of the socio-economic opportunities provided, as well as the impact that it poses to the entire system. Let's skip this slide. And look at this one. This affects the six clusters a little better. So I'll pick the technology solutions cluster. So there we're looking at process performance optimization, technology development, technology evaluation and demonstration. That is a very important point. Because a lot of the technologies in the waste sector are inbound from overseas, we need to understand it in our context and the appropriateness of it to, say, a rural municipality. It's not the same as City of Joburg putting in place a big technology offering. You can't do the same in Office Hour or something like that. It's different context. So you need to understand your technologies. And also technology localization. So what is inbound technologies? How much of it can be localized? This is just to illustrate how we're thinking about the different partner that we may require through the different clusters. So we see the partners change. So for technology, we're looking at the DTI and Department of Energy. DOE in particular, because there's a lot of focus on wasted energy in South Africa. Industry cuts across all of them, so we need to engage with them across it. This is just highlighting again the post the human capital development. We had we partnered with Massachusetts SA on postgraduate scholarships. So what we're hoping to do through the industry association is target these halls. So we also meet their needs. Because one of the laments of industry is that research is done by researchers and they don't ever look at what the real needs are in society. And industry cannot wait 10 to 15 years for the solutions. In terms of postgraduate, we received 36 applications. We've awarded 9 postgraduate scholarships for this year. The limiting factor there is the funding that we have for the program. So the focus on these studies are on technological solutions and also specifically the organic waste stream. We found that 56% of the awardees are black and 67% of them are female. So already we're starting to look at transforming this sector. The open R&D calls, 22 grant applications received. We've awarded 10 projects starting this year. Then the same focus. We're also looking at consolidating existing R&D. So we've got our first book, which is in process, which is looking at the beneficiation of biomass and organic waste in South Africa, which emerged out of that industry new science workshop on organic waste. The open innovation calls for upselling technologies. We've got 5 grant applications, we're funding 1. Again, it's funding the application. The industry new science workshop series I mentioned. This just shows you a summary of the areas, and by institution you can see it's your big institutions are the sponsor base. They're the ones that have the capability right now, and we're hoping to change that with time. As I said, we still have to go to the cohorts of experts that can actually assist us in achieving that. Future activities, we want to strengthen investment through country-to-country bilateral industry partnerships. We're also looking at supporting local government in the evaluation and demonstration of waste technologies. We'll continue our calls, and we're also looking at increasing waste RDI collaboration between South Africa and Africa and other key partners. We also launched the South African Bioplastics Forum in partnership with Plastics SA. Bioplastics is where you use an organic material as a source, like biomass, plants, etc., and you can make a polymer from that. Now, at the moment, it's about 30% of Rockray water bottle is already about 50% bio. And then we're also looking at launch now, in doing our funding call for research, we found a lot of the responses were bio refineries. And program 2 at ESG is funding work in that area. In program 5, we're funding work in that area already. The Water Resource Commission is funding work in that area. So we're also looking at establishing a research platform to avoid the duplication in the system, but also to see who the players want to attempt to talk to each other. I'm going on to the climate change work. We managed a project on behalf of the Department of Environmental Affairs on the high-level greenhouse gas mitigation technology implementation plan, which could also then mitigation potential analysis. And that's to identify 12 technology options that the country can look at in order to mitigate and meet its 50 climate gap, so to together with Mr. Matsuwani, we contributed to the terms of reference for the update of the technology needs assessment with the Department of Environmental Affairs, and we are co-chairing the project steering committee on that. The work has just been awarded to the CSR, so we had the first election meeting 2 weeks ago, so the work has just begun. As I said, I'm the national designated entity for the Climate Technology Change and Network, and this is under the United Nations. It's part of the climate change work. And what it is a mechanism to transfer climate technologies from the developed to the developing world. And at the NDE, I have to assess those country requests as we call them and put them through the CTCN. Last year we held 3 provincial workshops. We received only 4 requests. We consolidated 3 to 1. One we sent back for rework, so we engaged with that person to improve. And so we submitted 2 in November, and to update this, I just got notification. Both of our submissions have been approved by the global body for implementation. So far we've got 100% track record there. We've also engaged business on the CTCM, and in that respect, I'm sitting currently on 3 request proposals. And we also co-organized a panel for the Warsaw Social Science Forum, larger looking at the energy crisis in the country and how partnerships can come out. In terms of the hazard that Mr. Matsuwani reported earlier, the atlas, the risk and vulnerability atlas, is a portal to allow access to research institutions or information from those institutions, such as your Scion and all the initiatives we're funding in the area, and also to equip your decision makers at national, provincial, local governments and NGOs, private sector, with information on impact and risks that's associated with global dancing. If you recall the diagram that Mr. Matsuwani put up, all those programs, the atlas is at the bottom. So all those program information should feed into the atlas, and then you provide that information in a synthesized form to people's needs. We're reworking the atlas at the moment, and one of the things we're doing is we're migrating it out of the CSR into Scion. The reason is that Scion manages the portal anyway, so it doesn't make sense to have the management of the program sitting elsewhere when the portal is sitting inside Scion. So as I said here, we're providing a collection of spatial data sets, which can be used to build composite views within the atlas. These are screenshots of the atlas. We group the data sets by team. We also have the metadata descriptions are there as well. So the metadata includes things such as the person who brings forward the information, the publication, the abstract, etc. Coming back to the CTCM, This just tells you, what I've already said, that basically the service that offers is technical assistance to developing countries, sharing of information and knowledge, cross-region collaboration, and it's hosted by UNEP in collaboration with UNIDO, and it's supported by 11 partner institutions, of which the CSIR is one of the institutions. So this is sort of what they're looking at, is reducing your greenhouse gas emissions, strengthening your climate resilience through all the different facets, and you see water resources quite prominently in there. Energy use, energy supply is also, and waste management is also in there. The submissions process, so calls, what we decided, I put together an advisory committee around me, as I cannot be an entity on my own. And they advise me when we get calls if they meet on national needs. So I then take it to the advisory committee. We then refine things. We take it to the intergovernmental committee on climate change for voting, because DEA, who chair that meeting, are also in the advisory committee, so their inputs are received already. So the request is then sent to CCCN. They say they take 2 weeks. Experience it takes 8 weeks. So I must update that. The current call is closing at the end of March, and then we go to the IGCCC in the middle of April. So in those 2 weeks, we will assess all the requests that come on my desk. How the flow of money works is important, because even though somebody will submit the request to me, we'll assess it, we'll send it in, the CTCN decides who gets the money and who will implement that work. So the flow of money does not come back to the proposal or to the NDE or to DEA. So a consortium member, which the CSR is one, gets what they call small budgets. And as you can see, the value there is $50,000 USD. And the bigger ones of $250,000 USD go to network members. So one of my jobs as the NDE is to encourage South African institutions to register as network members. So far we only have one, the Institute for Natural Resources. I've spoken to Samedi, and they indicated they're putting in an application. And the energy research group at UCT are also putting in an application. So it's gaining momentum. It's still very young in South Africa and globally, but it's a two-year-old program worldwide. We also did a State of Green Technologies report for South Africa with the Academy of Science for South Africa. So here we wanted to look at reviewing what green technologies are available in the country, identifying gaps, and making recommendations to promote growth of green tech in South Africa. The reason we did this was we were looking for some document to help us as baseline. So the key recommendations that emerged, the obvious ones were policy certainty and policy coherence. There's implementer and developer roles that have to be defined in the system. As South Africa reaches the age of entrepreneurial state, skills transfer, innovation capacity, and so on. The important one there is the green technology has now. If you look at what DTI has done with a special economic zone, they've got a green economic zone they're putting in Atlantis. But also something we don't identify a lot in South Africa is our failures. So this continued project for those that failed should not be discarded. There are learnings to be had. We need to look at the learnings to take us forward as well. What's interesting to note that last year I engaged with Daiko from Japan, and now for the life of me I cannot remember what Daiko is. It's a Japanese association. They actually I do apologize. But they actually utilize this report in developing some of their strategies. And they actually requested me to send them more copies that they distributed in Japan. So this report has actually had quite a far reaching influence, well beyond what we ever thought it would. We also recently completed a baseline for green economy R&D investments as of 2011. It's still involved form, it's still going through our internal processes. But I just wanted to highlight what it is, what we found. So it's the first of its kind for South Africa. As far as we can find out, it seems it's the first of its kind anywhere, because we've got nothing to benchmark it against if we wanted to do that. So we use the annual R&D survey data that Session produces, and that proved to be the best data source available. But when we engage with Treasury, we also tap on the steering committee for this. The data they have is not just aggregated in that way, so that's when they test it. So we used the base year 2010-11, as that's also the year in which the Green Economy Report was signed in between government, business and labour. So what we found there, that the total expenditure in 2010-11 was 4.8 to 5.3 billion rand, which is a lot larger than we anticipated. So we have to readdress the target we had set ourselves, because that target's now going to be an almost impossible target to realize by 2019. And that target was a 300% increase of that number, which takes us to 12 to 15 billion rand by 2019. So what's also interesting is that 26% of that GDP contribution that R&D investment into green tech or green economy is sitting at 26% of GDP in terms of the expenditure to R&D. And that increased by 2% by 2013. So what's also interesting here was that the rationale and methodological approach for working through the concept of green R&D was also interesting to this project, and may also, and that's where we could not find an international benchmark. Thank you.
To do the opposite of what is supposed to be doing to the human capital.
Members, I think it's time for you to ask questions. I was just making comments. I don't think they need to answer my comments. But the other one, that's probably what I don't tell the mamas because I know that they'll be very happy. It was said by Kunatema Duran that we look at the nature, how to assume things, and we mimic them. I can just say that. You mimic nature and how it's doing things and you follow it up. And that says that whoever created the universe was a scientist. He knew what was doing. And he created it so that we could live in it and it was. That's what it means. I mean, if you want to build an airplane, you go to look at the bed, what is doing, and you say, mimic it. And it's already there. If you want to develop a land, you look at the, what is the slow of that, and all the things that's in the calendar. And it shoots at the thing, and it takes back, and solves it. And then you do something of that nature. But I think what's driven by science, I am for the village. Members, it's up to you to ask questions, but it was brilliant. Both of them are very brilliant. Not you want to play, there is a close up in it, but the way you spell it, you're confused with that. And you can see it looks like a lot of people are there. So, it looks like there's no problem with the soldiers that look at it. We'll take your picture and show the deputy president and say, deputy president, that must be one. Okay, members. Okay, I see you. I really have a question. Okay. Oh, by the way, you don't have ladies, we've got ladies on our side. That's why we start with ladies. That's why they're the ones who start with. We're trying to teach you that you must have more ladies.
Thank you, Chair. I'm quite interested in the South African Risk and Vulnerability Atlas. And you do say that it is open to all stakeholders, and that it is planned that NGOs and private sector can also maybe use it in the future. Has this in any way been used now with the drought that we are experiencing? Because my sense is that it contains very valuable information that can assist with planning for droughts. And also perhaps just when and how will it be made accessible to the broader public?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask for the list of acronyms that Dr. Letrude covered here as well. Yeah. I was happy that it also hit. Okay. I guess that's a good question for that. On that, that whole global change thing, I just wanted to find out if you also work also with the Ambassador Seko, who chairs the South African Corps, so that they just meet action. On overall performance, this is the scorecard one. You spoke of you collaborate with five African partners, and then there's the 55 million Rand annum that paid. I just wanted to find out who paid that 55 and who are these five African partners. And on the operation particular, the ocean economy, that's kind of what happened to the participation. Are you in that one? The other, the environmental slide, the base can say, they are cutting waste. I don't think This night where the water at the road net where on the transport team. The record at the EU platform. The one project co-founded with Europe. And just to put on this, what about the other two? What is the status of the other two? I think that's it. So, thank you.
Thank you
very much. The first question is to the, I think it's Dr. Mr. Magwali, where he spoke about the global challenging rollout of 30 institutions. So I'd like to know who promotes the challenge in the various departments of 30 institutions, since there's no particular one department that would deal with this sort of thing. And also the collaboration. We've covered on the Department of Environmental Affairs, but what about DEF and of course Department of Higher Education? Who is those agreements, those collaboration agreements with them, are those who's covered? And also, how is NRF promoting this particular challenge? It says a future priority is shale gas, and shale gas has just been approved, so it's no longer a future priority. It's actually quite important to actually focus on it now. We hear so many scary stories about shale gas, how it's bad for the environment, how it pollutes the subterranean water. So I think we need to make that a key focus. And then also to Dr. Roman, one question on there is, I see that the Department of Science and Technology goes and collaborate directly with the water boards. Is that going to be a function that the science and technology would undertake themselves? How are we geared to actually go and establish these collaborative projects with other institutions and organizations? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you very much, Walter. Without seeing other hands, I think you can. I'm not going to see yet. And I said that when I go to the solar panel, I don't find somebody might say, how do you know that thing that matters? Whatever the hell happens. I think I want to clear that the UN is never the only thing that it has put just a chance that it has to be others there. So there are no hell hazards if you leave them and you go in again and then you flash up the four times. There's no problem about it. So you can register yourself. But I think we need that factor I mentioned. How has the government listening to you as scientists? Or are the government listening to you as scientists when they make policies? Or they just make policies? Because some of the things that I'm mentioning here are very important for policymakers. Because the policies that I'm making, if you know somebody said, I thought my future was great, but I realized it was my past that was great, and my future is not that great. Now, you depend on scientists to tell you that the future is still great. Now, it's all about future. We make these promises for future. Are we taking this? Are we making our promises based on what you tell us as a center? Because some number, I think that we don't listen to scientists. Maybe they're hiding themselves in the laboratory, so we don't know what they're doing, but are we taking that control?
which I lost my MP to respond, and I'm not sure if Thomas has any comment that I want to add on if some of the points of view and I'll make comment if I feel that we need to ask Thomas to do the same. I think the questions people have taken is how these people check the answers.
Thank you very much. The question that has been persisting from the chair towards the end is being directed towards government, but the earlier part was to what extent is this scientific information package that people can understand, but to make even a knife and that could eventually happen. So how do we take this knowledge to the public so they can use it and understand it? I think that in terms of the value chain that have been sourced around was that there would be a science. It was important to understand the science before we can actually begin to translate it into then the technologies which could help communities and society, and then the services. It probably is fair to say that we could say that we have fairly established a good foundation for the science work to be done. But we are now beginning to look at the targeted technology approach in the water, waste, and the atlas. Now, in the translation of the two areas in terms of policy briefs that would then inform the policy, and then the packaging of the information to the different sectors of society, I think that we have made some progress, but there is a lot more that needs to be done in the area of advocacy and communication so that this information is accessible and understood and not packaged in scientific speak. So we need, I think that we will need to invest a little more on that aspect of translating scientific knowledge to the households, bringing it into the sitting rooms of the communities. So I think we do acknowledge that there's that part that needs to be invested more, thought through, and worked hard. Around the policy issue, I think that Imran is well positioned, but we do participate at high levels in policy inputs into other governments' strategies. So there is an understanding that we work together. We have representatives from our department that sit in six department committees. So there is an understanding, and they also come and participate in our own work. So there is a growing sense of coordination and input on that. So I would probably address the initial concern around accessibility of information around that. But also I was worried about the judgment day, which the chair talked about. We are beginning to have a sense that we cannot drive this work as projects, because eventually we need to get a big picture. So within the DSD, we have started to develop a flagship project. Given the geographical advantage that we have of two oceans and southern oceans, we have the celestial part of it and then the atmospheric. How do we create this southern tip as a world-class laboratory for understanding global change and especially climate change? So underway at the moment is to review how we've managed the global change to see whether we can have a flagship for air system science, which will be an equivalent of an SKA instead of a global laboratory work. So that the greater impact on ordinary people within South Africa could be understood more. So that's what we have thought around that, and we have a review that is going on, the document that's going through that way. So that we stop looking at science as disjointed, disconnected, as a singular laboratory that we're working on. So the judgment, definitely, we hope that through this understanding, working together, we will then impact on others. And this is the reason why it has been taken up at the static level. So there is a climate change strategic document which we, members of SADC, are subscribed to as a way of trying to find that these boundary divisions don't make sense to climate change affairs. So we need to look at the regional perspective. And Puga will take the opportunity to explain that around the issue of the Southern African sand standards and climate change and land use, South Africa membership of the five countries is that there is Botswana, Namibia, Angola, Zambia, and South Africa as South African countries. And then we have Cheman. So it started out with Cheman as a key partner with funding. So far the 55 million that was being referred to was referring to that. There is a commitment to a second phase of SASCO going up to 2020. So that has been secured and there will be continued work. Now, the same approach is being taken that we can't afford to have a country-by-country narrative of climate change. So we've been working towards the second strategy, which looks at mega projects across, if it is water system and hydrology, we're looking at it from across the Southern Africa and say what it is that we can do collaboratively and how can we put our resources together. So we really are trying to jump out of small projects into mega projects because that's what the region requires for us to have a direction. Thanks.
Thank you, Professor Sutter. I just to make a comment that those who are Christian, there was no scientific sense to push on the national issue. If people are probably in the billionaires, you want it to be 2 billionaires, so we are trying to push it away.
I think there were further questions. I think one was around interactions with the COP processes. I just want to believe that the COP processes, that the Honourable Member was just talking about the Conference of Parties and the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. If so, we are actively participating in the processes because I think one of the two obvious thing agenda items under UN 3.3 has to do with research, climate change research, and also technology transfer. So how does science and technology lead in those discussions in terms of those agenda items? So we also, in that process of preparing the country position paper, we do make input into that process. So when the international discourse takes place, we really have made input into that. That's number one. Number two, I think, was a question around lack maybe of collaborations with other departments, because I think what was prominent in my presentation was here, without mentioning other departments. We have collaborations with other departments such as agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. We have, for example, a special program that we work with raw materials. That's we call them public assets. Those are the raw materials that we need to secure for research purposes and also for the security, for food security purposes. So we do have collaborations with them now, the same with the health as well and others. Then the last part, I think, was around the role. There was a question around who promotes the work that we do. So I think in terms of the way we are organized with NRF, specifically the research management, function, they do have a special entity called SASTA, which is more on advocacy of the work that's done. And at TSC, we do have also a program on communication. So we are trying to use these platforms to communicate and promote the work that we do. I think those are the things that I wanted to mention.
Thanks. I'll respond to the question of the risk and vulnerability after this. If in the public domain, one of the things we're currently working on is actually tracking the users more effectively. But I cannot actually tell you right now if they have good user in the prompt response, or I don't think so, not at this point. As I said, we're working on a system to track. The only system we have at the moment is if someone writes something and they reference it, that government departments are not like five scientists. We don't reference anything we read, unfortunately, so it's sometimes hard to keep track. The Eureka platform, the two remaining projects, the issue we have there is we as DST, in partnership with the Water Research Commission, have committed funds towards projects we have identified to be part of, to apply for the label. The issue is on the other side of the earth after world, where the European partner who comes on board has to solicit funds from their government. And the two remaining projects have been unable to solicit those funds on their side. That's why it's not moving at the moment. In terms of collaborative projects with water boards, we're working quite closely with the Department of Water and Sanitation. As I said, they've incorporated our roadmap into Chapter 14. So the water boards report to them. In terms of our mandate as DSC for research, development and innovation, that is where the collaboration happens. So the water boards approach us with that mandate in mind. We're not trying to do the job of the department. We're just trying to assist them as best like possible with the current information.
There's one question that Jonah Blythe hasn't responded to, and that's on the operation participation. And then I have a few comments to make, so if you can take this.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question on PAKISA, Operation PAKISA, the oceans side. There are now many Operation PAKISAs as to how the Earth System Science plays a role in that area. The Earth System Science has also got some work that is associated with the coast and oceans. The program that was crashed around SOCO in terms of instrumentation, measuring and all that, that's part of the work that they are doing to look at the physics, the chemistry, the strength of the currents, and so all that kind of work also contributes to understanding the terrain in which we're working. There's also a biodiversity aspects of it that come through that work. So the so-called work is supported through the existing science in terms of the science and the infrastructure that they put in. But there's also the question of the Agalas current array, which are systems of it's like a square kilometer array, which you're looking at, but this is around for the sea. How do you begin to measure the strength of the currents and the temperatures and all that, and how would that impact around the mining activities if you were going back in that? So that tool is called the ASHA, is funded through SIAM, which collects that information. So there is specific research areas based on Earth System Sciences that is contributing to the work of Operation PAKISA. So they were part of the laboratories that met 2 years ago in terms of pushing of that work. There is also a program, but largely it's under the marine part of our program. We work together in Earth System Science and Marine, which is based at Rhodes University and also part of National Research Foundation group called SIRA, one of the research facilities. So they also work around the human capital development, around the work around the oceans and the like. We've also since then become part of the SIAMI, South African Maritime Institute of Work. So we're also contributing through that initiative on high-end human skills development. So there is quite a number of initiatives coming from the DST, specifically on Earth System Sciences, that is contributing to the work of Operation PAKISA. As you know, the underpinning principle is that we have to take ongoing activities and tweak them towards that because there was no budget. So what we've done is that we look at specifically on what work we do that speaks to Operation PAKISA oceans and then mention them.
Just to reinforce a few points, and I want to even go back to your third question.
Maybe before you come in that, I'm not sure whether the question that was asked by another developer didn't go. Maybe I didn't hear properly. If I understood what you said, so extension there is to say, is there a way we can mitigate this, this drought? Because we know what drought means under Norway. And we know from Kansas that rain is formed by fumes from the stream and it comes to the land as it rains. Now, is there a way of predicting or saying this is what's going to happen in the future? I'm not sure whether it was answered, but if it was answered, I didn't get this. You know the difficult one then is that Queen Mujati, I'm not sure whether it's mentioned before, but Queen Mujati is queen. She's not ready, but she must give birth to a queen. Now you don't know whether the child will be my child. So it's more complicated. We'll have to talk to you and try to do who becomes the owner to the queen. So now it can be tried to possibly but that it's the owner who donated the robot.
Okay, thanks. I was going to comment in terms of that additional information, because the question was whether Saba is being used, and I think what Henry indicated, he said, we actually don't know in the detail level because the platform is open and we don't track people on the absence, etc. But it should be, we're hoping that it's used a lot more. The Saba is available with Skype, sorry, I think it's in the episode, www.saba.co.za, you should be able to get access to it. And the intention was to get local governments to use it. But on the drought response, particularly, it's not going to be only dependent on Saba, because the other information you need. So with WRC and a number of other science councils, they have organized themselves into looking at how to more effectively put out the relevant information at the relevant levels, because the drought response, the national drought response, also need to understand local government and local government what needs to be done. So under their approaches, there are work being done, because even Almunia, etc., will affect the region very differently. There are local governments who have access to the good or have a good understanding of the direct impact of the drought in their areas, but in some cases you can only respond, you can't too much do much more than that, you know, it's kind of empty. So not only the Saba, but there are other things that we would do, but like Henry indicated, we need to be able, the big work that we want to do in the future is to have a better way of tracking how the atlas is being used and to ensure that it is used more effectively. This has come up as a gap in my own assessment of where there was too much focus on getting the tool established and less focus on getting the tool to be used. So that's part of our ongoing work around that. If there's a need for more information around the problem.
But I think Prof. said it also from the climate. But you notice something. You notice that the rain started almost end of October. And it's raining in the east. In terms of raining the whole day yesterday, it's not common. And you find that now in summer, there's some rain in the Western Cape, which is something that not used to happen. Is it because of the currents? Is there something that is changing in the current? That is making you get rain in summer in Cape Town. And in Eastern Cape, I know there was a lot of rain around June, July. And then Cape summer, there was nothing until March. Is it because of those currents came back a lot, whatever? But maybe you don't have to answer now, we can help. Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't know the direct answer. I know that the scientists are very cautious about how they talk about climate and weather, because essentially what they indicate is that drought conditions now are mainly as a result of the normal El Niño cycle. What is happening though is that long-term climate change is making it worse. But what's the impact of these two things? It's very difficult to tell, and we have to work on the best possibility. What the science is telling us though, and this is the work that Access and others does, continues to do, is that there are long-term trends that we can't know. So, for example, rainy seasons are starting earlier, lifestyle conditions are much higher. Some of those long-term impacts you would know, but on a year-by-year basis, it's very difficult to tell because, like now, the kind of drought conditions are mainly as a result of El Nino, but it's made worse by the fact that we have these recent climate changes. So it's very difficult, and it's why, in terms of responses, and this is what I think was communicated at the last meeting. With the drought, the previous drought that we existed, what happened was the government put in place through proper systems of getting the information. Because it's very difficult for one person to share information with one of the government. What we need to do, and this is maybe something we haven't done, is when we set up the risk and vulnerability assessment center in Limpopo, etc., part of their responsibilities was to make available the science. You need to set up what is called, and this is the comment that I wanted to make to the portfolio committee, and possibly a suggestion, because you raised a very important issue that I know takes up a lot of our time internally within DHB as well, is how do we get science into decision-making processes about not only policy decision-making, because the risk and vulnerability atlas, some of it is of use for municipal manager, but a lot of it is about the engineers in local governments who need to use it because when they plan for infrastructure, they need to take into account conditions. So this debate about how is it that we can build in our society the proper systems for science to get into policy as effectively as possible is not an easy one. We just had a two-day workshop that Inter-Academy Partnership, I think it came on your reference, ATSA, they had a two-day partnership around science advice. My own critique around that is there were not many decision makers in the room to talk about these things. About 15 years back, I was told that the portfolio committee, in fact, had a workshop on exactly this issue. Because the issue of science and policy is very dependent on topic. In some areas, there's a big contribution of science, and people take this into account, including the sector that you're familiar with, which is health. Health globally is known to be a sector that, in fact, looks at the science and evidence, even in clinical assessments, etc. Other sectors, it differs. So sector by sector, it differs quite a bit. In the environmental sector that we're talking about now, I can say with quite a high degree of confidence that there's a lot of uptake of the science. The question that the Honourable Paulson raised about other government funds. If you look at all of the adaptation strategies that GIS facilitated, a lot of it is based on science, based on information that we picked up around the risk and vulnerability. At that level, at the policy level, the science is strong. The science is less strong at the kind of implementation level. So when it comes to, for example, using the science to decide whether you want to put in road infrastructure that's going to have to withstand rain every year or rains once a year or that's going to be able to fluctuate between very rainy season, etc. That's the level at which I think the science is not as effectively used around, say, at the engineering, etc. So the whole issue about how policymakers, decision makers use science, it may be something that the portfolio committee wants to champion as part of its role today. Let's have a parliamentary seminar. And this is what, like I said, happened about 15 years ago. And at that time, I was told that they partnered with the DSA at that time. And they had a workshop which allowed each of the portfolio committees to talk about in their sectors, whether it's telecommunications, whether it's water, are they using science effects? And what is preventing them from using the science? That would be very valuable information for scientists to know why isn't it that decision makers tend to use, because it's not a case of scientists pushing information. It's also policy makers telling scientists, this is the kind of thing that if you develop the science around, you would be more inclined to use. So that bridge between policy makers and scientists is not something that we're struggling with only in South Africa. This is what came up through the workshop last week, but it's something that is being thought about in many other countries in the world, and some countries have gotten it better than others, but every country is struggling with the issue. So that's a suggestion that the portfolio committee wants to think about whether there's a need to have a kind of a parliamentary workshop on this issue, but the focus then is on the policymaker side. Why is it that our portfolio committee is using the scientific information? Maybe we find out that people just don't have access, or that the literature that's available just doesn't make sense. You need to be able to think about alternatives. And I want to end on that. One of the things that Zuma put in the presentation talked about a knowledge focus. Globally, what we have discovered is that there's policymakers, there's scientists, and sometimes it's very difficult for them. And a key part of the strategy is to build what we call boundary organization, or intermediary between these two groups that understand, in fact, both groups sufficiently and draw those groups. It's not going to happen naturally. And that's exactly what the Risk and Vulnerability SSP said, is which sit between the policymakers. You need to understand what policymakers want, you need to understand what is coming from the science, and develop something that can take the science to policy and decision making. And you need this in many, many areas, and there's a special agency that just focus on this. One of the proposals that was raised by Professor Gluckman was that in some countries like the UK now, they have these media centers where they have people who are trained to make sense of the academic literature and to start making them. But it's formalized. They look at what is happening and they continuously feed not only policymakers but society with what is the science telling us. And in this assessment, that is quite a big role in encouraging the use to look at this. So I think that this is not a simple issue to address, and it needs the scientists to think about it, but I also think it needs policymakers to guide us a lot more, to say we want to use the science, but we're not able to because of the following reasons, and to make that available so that we can use that intelligence to even steer and decide on how do we create the systems that meet the policy. So that was one. The last comment I want to make is around the health issue. I think the global change brain challenge, I have to be critical of the thing I have developed, I think it's a bit weak on the health aspect. And it's not only human health. It's also about animal health and it's about plant health. Some of the big impacts on climate change are going to be on pets. So not under the global change brain challenge, but through other things, people are looking at the climate change impacts. For example, we were in an industry on things called Settled Innovation Funds, and one of the sectors we're looking at is forestry. One of the big priorities of forestry and citrus, etc., is what are the new pests that's going to impact on us, and how do we deal with those pests? So the research is being done, but it's being done not entirely under the global change, pretty fine. It's not a problem, because it's not really being done under the global change brain challenge or not. It's where the society is doing enough research around this. In the human health aspect, there is some work done by UP, etc., that's looking at increase in malaria incidents, increase in other waterborne diseases, etc., as a result of increasing temperatures. But combined, I am not sure whether we'll be able to ask clients if it's enough, if enough research is done. But I think it's been done for human health, plant health, and the group. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We are, I'm so sorry about the FT. So let's finish early. And I don't see any hands. So I think it's for us, Mr. Mati, to round up and close if you agree with me so that we can have an early last seat. Especially that we can have. But the first one is to thank you very much for your time. We thank you very much for the information that you have given us. I think we are taking some of those things very seriously. And I don't think we are wrong when we say science is the Bible of the universe. But that is only that as policymakers, we might not be understanding that. And it was not a way of pointing fingers to the scientists, but to say, how do you help us to get this information so that when we make decisions, we know what's going to happen in the future. But I think you put it very nicely in that it takes two to tango. The politicians need to come up, because in many cases, that the people are voting. If they don't come up to the scientists and say, scientists, this is what we want. Scientists don't know what is needed. So it's the politicians themselves who are supposed to say, give us the future, and then we plan according to what you actually telling us. Maybe. It's a challenge to the politicians that are sitting in. There's something that always gets done in Malawi. I'm not sure whether you have ever got Parliament and sit up there and watch that. When every day they come there, they say motions without notice. Motions without respect. It is every time to those motions without notice. So somebody stands and says, one day we must discuss this. But you never hear those things being discussed. Maybe it's a challenge to the politicians to take your hit now and say, on this day they're going to stand up and say, politicians must discuss how important science is to our global change. And let it be debated in Parliament. It might not come up, but it needs to give us some evidence to help to make it for us so that it will be easy to be taken up. And the things that we take up that become key to us. There's always one should believe that they are little, but they are not. But you some of us talk about finances, which is important. But I think science is more important than that, even funding it. That's why you always talk about energy goals. Where there's going to be an energy goal that is a standalone, where everybody putting money there and it's not going to be controlled by any particular department who's going to say when there's a virus that has come up. Well, what do you call this one balance when they pick up all the money that you have put in the country get taken for the government and you end up stopping someone in the future. I think we need an answer for this is what we've been talking about all the time that there must be an answer for and not only that, but what makes science to move it's not that that's the thinking. It's the brains that are coming from human beings. Now, if you develop human capital, and we know in South Africa, those who fought before 1996, they were fighting for the fact that even those that were looked down upon are as brilliant as the others, but they were left behind. So the only thinkers were left at 10 million, out of 40 million. But now, the department has not found this training everybody to be thinkers. And the more thinkers we have, the better the country is going to be, the better we can focus to the future. That brings us about, yesterday, we were debating about, there was a debate about racism. I think it's high time that we leave those things. Nature is going to work itself out. But the whole question is on those things that are uniting us. And one of them is science. Because if we don't control the science, we're all going to perish. But we're concentrating on certain things where we look down upon the other because of the color. And it makes me believe that the way we are mobile, the way we make the globe to be small, it tells me that in 100 years to come, you won't have a specific race. I'm not sure if you agree with me. The way we're moving around the world, I can wake up at home in Finland in the evening, I sleep in the day. And my kids don't see a color. They just see human beings. Now, you imagine in 100 years to come, because my child might say, I want to get married to a white lady in America. I'm not going to say no to her. But in 100 years, you find that you are not going to have a specific color. That is just a pure human. It's just going to be better. And we need to concentrate on things that are going to push the judgment day further so that we can live longer. I think the first thing we need to concentrate on, but we're still going through this learning lesson. So we need to unite as eight people, not as South Africans, but just eight people in the whole world. Because this is affecting all of us. And when you listen to Henry talking about, there are so many challenges, but the tool that is concentrating on is waste and water. Those are the key numbers, but there are others, but those are the main ones. that we need to look to emerge as Pakistan. And then Matiwane comes to our teams that we are in this world, we are destroying ourselves, but we need to make sure that as scientists we look into how to mitigate that in the room perish quicker than Matiwane. That's why we think that they are the most vulnerable people. We need to keep it here. If you are getting low salary, can you talk to the members so that you can get better? I'm not promising that they will win the battle, but you must get better salary so that we can look into our future and make sure that we're going to live longer. Living longer doesn't mean that I must die, but it means that the next generation must enjoy this world. And we can only do that by being united and make sure that these are the key things to our growth, to our unity. These are the key things that we need to work together. Because what affects us in South Africa is affecting them in America, is affecting them in Britain, is affecting them in China. And if we don't look upon ourselves here, or they don't do it, we're all going to perish at the same time. Because we want more what's going on. So we'll take and begin a little time and see what can be there. It's so easy to blame somebody, but if you have to find the thing that is yourself, I've done something wrong. You always want to say, no, it's so wrong. So take it upon us, we want your advice, and we're going to see what we can do in making sure that the politicians understand that we are being driven by science. And there's no way that it's going to change. And even the indigenous knowledge professors has been driving through those as we are called indigenous. But there's been trying to science, whether it was recognized or not, or not. And when that was used as a limit now, it's because there was science that was doing. It's only to confirm it whether it was secured now or safe for the people, but it was very unusual and it was tired. So we need to engage even with that one. Thank you very much. Development, thank you very much.